Hey Chicago, it's Nudia Hernandez from Vocalo. Taylor Bennett and A Damn Killer will be joining me for Vocalo's Summer Meltdown concert on July 11th at Bottom Lounge. It's free and the good vibes are endless. For more, head to wbez.org/events.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. So today's guest, if you don't know her by name, you probably been knowing her by face, voice, and talent. CCH Pounder has acted in all manner of TV dramas. The X-Files, NCIS, she was Dr. Angela Hicks on ER, and Detective Claudette Wims on The Shield.
It is everything in me not to slap you silly.
CCH Pounder is in some films, too, including both of the Avatars as the spiritual leader, Moad. She has multiple Emmy nominations, and her voice with that British Guyana accent is so singular. She's won several Audie Awards, too. But fans of her acting might not know that CCH Pounder is also a renowned art collector. So much so that if she comes across your work and loves it, she might just put you on a map. Currently, some pieces from CCH Pounder's collection are installed at the DuSable Black History Museum, and everything in it is by Black artists from the African diaspora. I went to the installation, and the first painting I noticed was right there at the entrance, a painting of a woman sticking her leg out, wearing a high heel, shrouded by jungle greenery, covered in thick curls of hair. CCH has a story about every piece of work that she collects. And she said this one depicted a temptress that she calls Les Jeux Bless by an artist named Firelay Baez.
I've seen her work before, but when I walked past this piece, it was like, that's Les Jeux Bless. And it's a childhood story, but it's a scary story. Les Jeux Bless was a creature disguised as a woman who lived in the kapok tree. And as men would go by, she would try to seduce them by sticking out her leg. And as you can see in the beautiful high heel thing, she'd stick that out and the man would go, ooh, let me go see what's over there. And then she'd kill them and eat them. And when I walked by that piece, all those stories of my childhood just came like in a flash.
Wow.
Me sitting on the porch, listening to Joyce tell these scary stories.
Yeah.
I turned to the fella and I said, I have to have that piece. Yeah, it has to come home with
Where
me.
Was it? Where were you?
We were in Miami at the art fair.
Okay.
I was with another girlfriend who had no idea who Les Jeux Bless was. She was from England and was like, what are you talking about? I think one of these old Caribbean stories that I remember as a kid. Mm-hmm. Now, Firelay has gone on to become a really marvelous artist who is very well known. She's in museums all over the world. And just my luck that I connected to that particular story.
That's amazing. Yeah. What stood out to me about that piece was how subversive it was. I see this woman who has this one heeled shoe and this one very bare foot. And then she's hairy as I don't know what. And she's in the forest, you know. She's like, look, I got this shoe on, but I'm also out here in these forests. And the same, you know, with speaking of subversive is, you know, there's the piece by Jeffrey Holder, which is these men who are, you know, half nude, and they're in this intimate stance with each other and with other people. Yeah, can you talk about subverting norms and expectations when you think about surrounding yourself with art and the art that you really like to collect?
I think almost every piece of art speaks to me in some geopolitical way that even I did not realize it in the beginning. That's when I bought it. I have a marvelous piece by Salah El-Mour. He is a Sudanese artist. And it is of a naked woman standing in front of about 20 men, all dressed in black suits with a black tie, standing next to a vase of sunflowers. And their gaze is looking everywhere but at her. And he calls it a vase of sunflowers. And I go, wait a minute.
Something else, some hidden meaning here.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think coming from a very patriarchal society where he lives, it's definitely a tristes on, look, we treat women literally like an object. And she was objectified in that painting. There are things that are going on that sometimes words don't do it. Sometimes music doesn't do it, but sometimes a piece of art can do it, can force you to think in another direction.
Yes. So when I think about collecting art myself, I think about what looks good. I think about the things that make me feel and the things that I can relate to. But I talked to the director of curatorial services at DuSable, Danny Dunson, and he told me that it's so much more for you, so much more than aesthetics. He told me you have a critical and historical eye. And I just want to know, what is on your mind when you're looking for art?
Well, first of all, what you said, what you look for, I think that's how we all start out. What looks good. It'd be great in my apartment.
Yes.
You know, it reminds me of something. And then that's how the first thing starts. It reminds me of my mother in the garden. You know, it reminds me of, oh my God, the first time I was in school. I think this is a typical starting point. I, as a collector, I have now collected for over 40 years. So I start to become critical about what I'm collecting. For instance, in the beginning, I think there was a particular artist that I liked so much. You know, I got one, I got two, I got three, I got four. And it's like, okay, stop. And then I think one time my husband said, you know, I'm only married to one woman. Who are all these women on all the walls? So many female portraits.
You know? Yeah.
I think as a woman in who understands being in a woman's world, trying to straddle onto a man's world, a lot of these paintings sort of expressed how I was feeling. So there's that. And then you collect a great deal, and then you start to get critical, like, well, maybe he's right. I should have some male images in my collection. Maybe I should have some landscape images. Maybe I should understand abstract images a bit more. And so that's how I start, and I think most other people start to develop that kind of eye about what else will attract you. One thing that I have to say is that I have yet to become super interested in is, if I buy this painting, will it be worth this much amount of money in a few years? I'm happy that I spent the time developing my eye, because over time, some of them have indeed become valuable pieces. So that's the bonus. It's not what I strive for.
Yeah, pleasant surprise. Let's talk about that value question. I'm thinking about it in the context of Black representation in the fine arts, and how we value Black art in our country and the world over, right? It's not, has historically hasn't been valued. And I'm wondering how does this factor into how you approach collecting and showing art?
Yes, because, you know, we have an unfortunate history of not approving of the things that we do until the other approves them, which is really something that I pray every day that we have to grow out of it, because it's in every strata of our lives, but it also explains that how dastardly a situation we were put in, and it's going to take years to dismantle, unfortunately. So finally, we're coming around the bend where we said, I want to do this for me. Dusab is a perfect example. After me, they're bringing in Ruth Carter with her costumes from Wakanda and other ships that she has done. This is the exciting part.
Yes.
When we finally discover our own, spread it around, because that's what makes the other people come to us. It's like, oh, how come they're so interested in that? What's going on? You know, and so we need to love our art, and then others will get to like it, and they'll like it too. It sounds really simple, but it truly is a domino effect of how these loves and passions start.
Yeah. For you, I mean, thinking about art as a love and a passion that started somewhere, I wonder if you can pinpoint a time when you were like, okay, I'm starting to collect some things that I really love. Oh, I got a real collection going here. Like, do you remember when you realized that, or was that something that you had on your mind all along? Like, I'm going to start here and I'm about to be an immense collector.
Well, I think I had a collection going for quite a while. Then I met my husband, who was an art aficionado, but for African traditional art. And he always wanted a museum. I think like the third day after I met him, he's like, boy, if I could just get a museum. And one of the things was he was procuring work for museums, traditional African art. And then when we sat down and talked about it, I said, you know, you can't afford to do it.
Let's be honest.
We can't afford the testing to see that these are original pieces that have just been buried for a few days and the color changes. We can't afford that. But what we can afford is contemporary art. It's was the 90s. Things were just beginning to, you know, art was sort of moving around a little bit. And so that's how we started. And we opened up our museum with what I would say were 34 lovely pieces. Can you imagine? But it was opened in Dakar, Senegal. It was, in the end, a really wonderful, wonderful gem of a museum of contemporary art that he gifted to the state after his passing. Then I looked around at my art in America that I said, oh my goodness, I've got a lot of stuff. I am a collector, and people would call me and say, this is happening, Cece. You know, when your name is in the wind, do you think Cece would like my work? Do you think, you know, when that starts to happen, then you realize, I believe I'm a collector.
All right.
Yeah. And that was, it's got to be like 25 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe 30. Yeah.
A lot of the work, going back to the installation, a lot of the work is early work from now seasoned and renowned artists. I mean, you talked about that with Firelay Baez and also, I mean, Kehinde Wiley. You have a really super early, almost unrecognizable piece in there by Kehinde and Jeffrey Holder as well, who has passed away now. I wonder, what is it about the work of folks just getting started that really interests you?
Well, I think that's how most of us start, because that's the only way we can. I don't I mean, a lot of people obviously are born with the kind of extra funds to also add art to their collection, and also coming to the realization that that's something that should be part of your life is a big thing as well. Because you can be, I mean, you can be 20 and look at a piece that's $1,000 and look at a piece that's $15,000 and say, I want the $15,000. Can I pay for it, but, you know, $100 a month for the rest of my life? If you're that passionate about it, you can do that.
Wow.
I was in a wonderful position because I lived amongst artists. And so there was no way that I would not see these people. See the, I remember seeing the work of Joe Anraim, a white American artist who, beautiful work. And every, you know, few months we'd swing by his studio and kind of go, oh, now look what he's done. And so now you are even unconsciously acquiring a love and a passion for this kind of work. So I think that's the start. My least favorite thing is a print, because the print factor these days has become so turned that you think, ah, I've got a print, it's 1 out of 50, and it's, you know, 12 by 10, and then a year later you'll see the same artist, oh, this is 1 out of 50, but it's 15 by 6, you know, six. And but that makes it individually different, which I find a little frustrating. So, I would go for a print when I've got absolutely no choice.
Okay.
Or I would say that that print, I have it because the meaning of the painting gave me this leap into discovering like the next thing.
Mm. So, yeah. So it's the story of it more.
It's the story of it. And that's what I do now as a collector. I think the story of your collection now becomes the next thing, you know, and I look at it and I go, oh, there are holes missing. I'm from Guyana. Who are my Guyanese artists?
Mm.
I love landscapes. I love flowers. I love gardens. Why are there no landscape paintings in your collection?
Mm.
So each time there's something fills the gap. And so I'm a more conscious acquirer of things mm-hmm. than when I was before, when I would just walk up to a painting and
gotta
be on my wall. And I don't have that as much anymore.
Sometimes things just strike you though, you know, you gotta get it. But yeah, that makes sense.
Yes,
so last question. Mm-hmm. If the art that you come across, the art that you surround yourself with could make a point or tell a story, like if I were to enter into your space where you keep everything and take it all in, what would the moral of the story be that you would hope or think that people would gather?
Oh, tougher question than I thought, because it's the moral of the story. It's not like what they think she is. I'm going to sort of edge my way into it sideways by saying, first of all, without a doubt, one would know that I was a woman from the diaspora, that I came from somewhere else, that I was not specifically American, because the choices are not just African in the sense of if I were like a African-American just into African art.
Mm-hmm.
You would come in and you would see art that definitely represents women, that definitely represents Africa and the Caribbean and the United States, and that I have a passion for that. I also like things like very pretty teacups. I mean, you know, so...
So we would see some of those in there too. Okay, got you.
a mix of things. Yes. But I think the first thing you would think of is she has an inclusivity factor in her life. That she has a huge sense of who she is and therefore can be inclusive of others. And I think that probably when people come into the room, after they say, oh, it's like a museum, which I don't necessarily feel great about, but you know, because you have mothers going to their kids, don't you touch anything in this house, you know, you don't want them to do that. You want them to kind of go, oh, mommy, what's that?
Yeah.
But I still have that Jeffrey Holder mystique where all are welcome. Mm-hmm. Let's talk. The world, let's just, you know, try to enjoy each other's company. So that I think is still there.
Wow. It sounds like there's a curiosity in there too that you really value.
Yes. And to remain curious for as long as you can, I think is probably one of the most important things, to remain curious and also to appreciate where you came from. It's never going to be as glamorous and fabulous as one would imagine. And when I say that, it's because your parents shelter you from so much. But when you hear their stories, you go, huh? And when you hear your grandparents' stories, you gotta be kidding.
Yeah.
But these are amazing survivors from places that you cannot imagine, that we don't even know, that they didn't know. But they survived where they landed. I appreciate that so much about the ancestral part of the collection, that there is an attachment somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a conversation with the talented, prolific, and curious CCH Pounder. CCH, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Erin. It was lovely talking with you and getting questions that are different. It's really lovely. Yeah, thank you.
You can check out Diaspora Stories, Selections from the CCH Pounder Collection, now through July 16th at the DuSable Black History Museum and Education Center in Washington Park. And that's it for today. Thank you to Justin Bull for producing The Rundown and to Ariel Van Clee for editing the show. Dave Miska engineered today's episode, and our theme music is by Louis Weeks. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.